haven't you, Bibi?
Yeah, I mean, I completely regret it, and it was, you know, an unsisterly thing to do and not something I was happy about doing, but I kind of know myself well enough to know why I did it. And again, why I wrote it, because I think that people do judge. I think it's a real walk in my shoes situation.
Thank you very much for being honest with us. That's Bibi Lynch, and you also heard there from Susanna Absey. Thank you for your time this morning. And, of course, if you've got anything to add to that, you can contact the programme. Now, the new drama serial. It's an adaptation of C.J. Sansom's best-selling Tudor crime novel, Dissolution. It's 1537. The reformist lawyer, Matthew Shardlake, is summoned to meet Thomas Cromwell, whose plan to dissolve the abbeys by stealth has been hampered by the cold-blooded murder of a king's commissioner.
It was well planned.
Damn this cold.
The murderer had dreamed of killing him so many times.
Meeting in the kitchen at this hour.
Waiting. Seeking justice.
Are you here? Monk? Where are you? Make yourself known. I warn you, don't waste my time.
It was done. And I, Matthew Shardlake, would go to the dark heart of it. Summoned to Westminster, I averted my eyes at London Bridge Arch, where the heads of executed traitors stood on long poles, the gulls circling and pecking. I passed rain-bedraggled bands of ex-monks, watching carriers unload wagons of confiscated relics. And I saw a crowd pressed round a hook-beaked bird of red and gold, which cried out, "Death to the Pope! Death to the Bishop of Rome!" At the palace, I was ushered through a hall full of hushed clerks, hard at work in the web of my master. At the far end was a large door where I was bid enter. There, in the candlelit gloom of his office, stood the Vicar General himself, Lord Cromwell.
Close the door, Matthew. Come over here. Look at this. A child's skull in a gold casket.
Barbara Sanctissima, my lord.
The skull of St. Barbara. It's from the Cluniac Priory of Leeds. A most holy relic. And here, a skull from a nunnery in Lancashire. Also St. Barbara. They may have two-headed dragons in the Indies, but here we have two-headed saints.
Mm-hmm. I wonder who they were.
That's my Matthew, always after an answer. I don't know who they were, but the caskets will be melted down like all the others, and the skulls will go to the dunghill. Men should not worship bones. Now come, sit down. We have business. I am worried about you, Matthew.
A stab of fear lanced through me, and I felt my heart pound. I had tried to keep my doubts to myself. Surely I had told nobody.
Some say you are soft, lacking in fire and godly zeal, perhaps even in loyalty.
My lord, I am as against papacy as I have always been.
Good. I have a task for you, one suited to your lawyer's talents. The future of reform may depend on it. This deceit, monasticism, this idolatry, greed and secret loyalty to the Bishop of Rome. 200 monasteries owning a sixth of the country's wealth. It is a canker, Matthew, in the heart of the realm, and I will have it ripped out.
You have made a good start.
I have barely scratched the surface, but I have to proceed carefully. The king fears rebellion and won't have any more forced surrenders. So what I need, Matthew, are voluntary surrenders of the monasteries.
But why would they do that?
Because I can bring particular pressure to bear. I have persuaded the king to let me pick a dozen houses, and in the last 2 weeks I have sent out chosen men to offer the abbots the alternatives of voluntary surrender, with pensions for all and fat ones for the abbots, or prosecution. Have you heard of Scarnsey?
No, my lord.
It is a Benedictine house in an old silted-up channel port on the Kent-Sussex border. There's a history of vice at Scarnsey, and the local justice of the peace, who is one of us, says the abbot is selling off land cheap. I sent Robin Singleton there last week to see what he could stir up.
A forceful man, Singleton. I've been against him in the courts.
It was his force I wanted. I gave him a canon lawyer, too, for assistance. An old Cambridge reformer, Lawrence Goodhaps. But this arrived from Goodhaps yesterday morning.
I write in haste, my lord, and send this letter by a boy of the town, as I dare trust none in this place. My master Singleton is foully murdered in the heart of the monastery in a most terrible manner. He was found in the kitchen in a lake of blood, his head cut clean off. Some great enemy of your lordship must have done this, but all here deny it. Please send help, my lord, and tell me what I should do.
The king's authority struck down, Matthew. If this got out, think of the notions it would give to the fanatics and lunatics in every religious house in the land.
Does the king know, my lord?
He does not. If I tell him, he would send in soldiers and hang the abbot from the steeple. And that would be the end of my strategy. I need this resolved quickly and secretly. I want you down there at once.
But, my lord, I'm not an experienced commissioner.
I grant you full powers under my authority as Vicar General to give any order, obtain any access.
I have never had official dealings with monks.
You are educated by them, Matthew. You know their ways. And this needs delicate handling. As well as the land sales, there has been a nest of sodomites there. Under the new act, that is punishable by death. Take Mark Poor. Go now, and tell no one.
Mark has no great religious zeal.
He has a sharp brain, and it will be good to have a pair of strong arms at your side.
But he will not understand what is at stake.
He does not need to, as long as he is loyal and does what you tell him. After the scandal, it may help him work his passage back to employment in the courts. Find the murderer quickly, Matthew. But above all, quietly.
He put his arm around my shoulder, a recognized sign of favor. But as he did, my eye fell again on the two grinning skulls, and I suppressed a shiver. We left London at daybreak on All Souls' Day. Mark Poor with his sword strapped to his side.
By God's son, it's cold, sir.
You've been in soft offices too long. Your blood needs thickening.
Looks like snow.
In the afternoon, we crested the North Downs and saw before us the ancient forest of the Weald. Dusk was falling when we found a poor hamlet beyond the forest. In a smoke-filled inn, we were served a greasy supper and were watched as we ate by three ruffians in the far corner. It was no doubt my hunchback that bothered them. We walked past them on our way upstairs.
It's a curse, I tell you.
I heard that, Abbey Lubber!
Mark, no!
Oh, you get bad luck!
You would! Come, we will go!
Oh, because a hunchback brushed by you, you'll get bad luck in the shape of his fist!
Trouble here?
Oh, it's no trouble, Master. It's just a lesson in manners. God's bones, you will learn well.
Get off me!
Mark, step back! When he said sorry!
I order you, step back! Now!
But sir...
Go up to our room! We want no discord here. You listen to me. You will do as I tell you. Lord Cromwell said that if you acquit yourself here, you may be allowed back to your clerk's post. The one he found you, at my request.
I know, sir.
If the king had found out what you did with that foolish girl, he'd have you whipped and scarred for life. You are a commoner, like me, and we keep our place.
But surely we should not have to suffer the insults of these hinds downstairs, master.
We are in hostile country and must be quiet. They are still papists. And no doubt they believe that hunchbacks bring bad luck.
But, sir...
It's what most people think. I've seen men cross themselves at my approach for all my fine clothes. Now, go to sleep. We have another day's ride ahead of us tomorrow before Scansey.
I had made light of it as ever, but the looks the villagers gave my hump and the abbey lubber's remark set a familiar stab of pain through me. It was better to ignore it, to get on with such life as God allowed. When you are 15, that is impossible. When you are 15, your life can be defined. I was a pupil at the Cathedral School in Lichfield. I was filled with godly fervour. I felt called. I went to see Brother Andrew, who taught Greek and Latin poorly, but who drank expertly.
You can never be a priest. You realise that?
I asked him why not.
You know from the book of Genesis that God made us in his own image, do you not? To serve his church, you must conform to that image. Anyone with a visible affliction, even a withered limb, let alone a great crooked humpback like yours, can never be a priest. How could you show yourself as an intercessor between ordinary sinful humanity and the majesty of God when your form is so much less than theirs?
I ran from the room and fled to the cathedral. If the church would not have me, I had nowhere to go. I was alone. And then Christ spoke to me. I heard a voice inside my head. "You are not alone," it said. And suddenly I felt great warmth, a sense of love and peace infused my being. I had never heard that voice before, and I have never heard it again. But perhaps once in a lifetime is all we are given. Many are not given that.
Good horse.
Not long.
We'd left at first light, in the hard frost, and ridden on white roads through white trees into the morning and early afternoon.
Look, sir.
The pathway had led us to the top of a hillside. Now below us the sea, and to our right a tidal river cut through the low hills, reaching the sea through a great swathe of marshland. Bordering the marsh was a small town, and a mile off stood a great complex of buildings in ancient yellow stone, dominated by a great Norman church, almost as large as a cathedral, and surrounded by a high enclosing wall. The Monastery of Scansey.
It's the edge of the world. The Lord has brought us safe through our tribulations.
I think we have more of those ahead. Come on.
Part 2 of Dissolution on Woman's Hour tomorrow. Sally emails to say, I've heard Jane Garvey saying some daft things, but equating a varicose vein operation to childbirth is the daftest yet. Childbirth is not a medical condition, it's a natural process. So many emails about that first discussion on the programme today on pain relief in childbirth and what constitutes a normal birth, that it is a subject we will of course return to. But what's brilliant about the emails is they are all so different. So thank you for expressing all your opinions. We appreciate it. Tomorrow on the programme, do GPs know enough about fertility treatment? And the novelist Rose Tremaine.
Woman's Hour was presented by Jane Garvey and produced by Anna Bailey. The editor is Alice Feinstein. In half an hour, there's comedy here on Radio 4 with Justin, who's still living with his father-in-law, still working with his ex-wife, and still calling on his gran for her words of wisdom. Everyone Quite Likes Justin is at 11:30. After the news, we take the journey of a lifetime recorded on location in Argentina.
We're just coming through the gate, and straight away, I'm attracted towards the tiny lime green light on the ground. This is incredible.
A nighttime safari to examine the enigmatic glowworm.
I said we'd see them, and we have.
The return of the series that looks at the world of wildlife conservation.
There are species that stir people, that make them connect to their local countryside.
Saving Species, tomorrow morning at 11 on BBC Radio 4.